Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this is a clarifying language. Some of you who are here before may recall the situation in a township whereby current law allowed for town boards to extinguish interest in a quote-unquote abandoned road. In order for them to assert that authority, the road had to have not had any public investment in 25 years and make some other criteria. And prior to we started working on this, there actually wasn't even notification to the property owners if, in fact, they were going to do it. A situation occurred for a constituent of mine in which they'd held property in their family for over 80 years. The roadway actually had a public interest established in it within the 25-year period. The town board failed to recognize that and reverse their action. I actually have a whole file from the DNR of all the expenditures that were made in that road right-of-way in the last 25 years, starting with a document that was signed by the town board official establishing the public interest in the snowmobile trail along the road right-of-way within that 25-year period. So we passed legislation last year to compel the town board to turn a situation such as this, turn the right-of-way into a cartway. When the property owner tried to assert his right under the new legislation to have access to his property through a cartway, we got a letter from the attorney for the township saying that while the language said that the road was constructed, they made the point that the actual improvements were constructed by the snowmobile club, not the subdivision of the state, and that if we were to include the words funding, then they would recognize that there was a right to have this turned back or turned into a cartway, and we could get this problem solved. So I would be happy to stand for any questions. Chair Hornstein and I had a discussion with Kent Tulum from the township. He said he'd help in whatever way. This seemed to be a solution. While a little bit cumbersome, hopefully it will get it resolved, and I will never have to have a town road bill ever again.
Thank you very much, Representative Holberg. I think this goes back at least 2 years. And I do really appreciate the hard work you've done and your work with Mr. Tulum. He's here so much, I feel like he's a representative. But, Mrs. Sloan, do you have any comments? Okay. Are there any questions from the committee to Representative Holbert?
And, Mr. Chair, I would say thank you to the DNR. They had to go through dusty boxes and look up all kinds of stuff to get all this documentation of all the money that was spent in that right away over the years.
Thanks to the DNR as well. Members, are there any questions of the author? Do you have any final thoughts?
Let's go.
Okay. Vote. I will renew my motion that House File 1568 be recommended to pass and be sent to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, the motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Holbert. Our next bill is House File 1693, Representative Morrow. And this is one that we will hold over for possible inclusion in the still nascent omnibus transportation policy bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Mr. Chair and members, this is House File 1693, Environmental Impact Statement Completion. You all should have received in your packet materials a pink piece of information from the U.S. Highway 14 Partnership. We have two portions of Highway 14 alone that have had trouble getting their EISs done in order to allow for expansion from two-lane to four-lane. I would simply like to point out, members on that sheet, that the EIS process began in 2004 from New Ulm to North Mankato on Highway 14. It was expected that the EIS would be done in 2007. It was then pushed back to 2008. It was then pushed back to spring 2009. Now, we've been told maybe 2009, 2010. I have two testifiers with me who will talk about the saga of Highway 14 and the inability to get EIS to finish. And first I turn to Mike Milstead.
Mr. Chairman and the committee, my name is Mike Milstead. I am the Vice President of Ag Power Enterprises. Ag Power is a John Deere dealership with four locations in Owatonna, Hollandale, Waseca, and Belle Plaine. We currently have 85 employees, with 27 of them at our Owatonna location. Within those 27 people, they actually work at three different facilities in Owatonna. The reason for that is because of our growth, and essentially we have exceeded the limitations of our main facility. That building was built in the 60s, so lo and behold, what we want to do is build a new location. We actually have land purchased and have been waiting on Highway 14. We're unable to proceed because of the uncertainty of the completion of the project, and if we continue to see additional delays, we're going to be forced to look at a different location. So right now, the time for us is to build. Ag Power Enterprises has two very successful years behind us due to the agricultural economy being very strong. However, those of you that don't know, the agriculture business is very cyclical, and not sure when a downturn is going to happen, but I'm very sure it's going to happen. So for us to build a new facility in a down year is not, it's going to be difficult for us to manage, if at all. Continued delays in the Highway 14 project could impact the financial ability for Ag Power to build. What does the new facility mean to Ag Power? A more efficient state-of-the-art facility that is built for our business. We will consolidate our multiple facilities into a single location. We will establish a competitive edge. We'll solidify Ag Power's presence. We also have what we would see as a higher morale within our employees because right now we have shared workspaces, shared offices. We also would see an increase in our business because today our facility does not have a showroom. It is really a shop, an ag shop, and there's a customer segment that we don't touch today because they don't see us as a retail environment. New facility would offer that. With the new facility, we'll be able to attract and retain more professional employees. We also would see a more energy efficient facility in a new facility because, I mean, just it's an outdated location today. That's just what we have within our business, not to mention what we would offer for the rest of the surrounding businesses as far as subcontractors when you're looking at a $6 million construction, you're going to have quite a few multiple subcontractors involved. So
thank you.
And Mr. Chair, I'd also like to introduce Mayor Gary Zelma from North Mankato, who's also with the Highway 14 Partnership.
Welcome, Mayor.
Thank you. My name's Gary Zelma. I'm the Mayor of North Mankato, Representative, and Chairman Holmstein. I really appreciate this opportunity to come up and present in front of you. I guess the reason I'm here is I think times have changed. We have been struggling on Highway 14 for 40 years, and when they were down in Mankato to take testimony last summer, I got up and spoke, and Representative Leader was there, and he said, "Geez, 40 years ago, you guys were up here talking about this. We still don't have this done. So what are we going to do to get it done?" Well, the times have changed. We have this project ready to go in many cases, but we don't have the EISs completed. There's money out there available. We couldn't go after it because the EISs weren't completed. What we have done is tried to segment this so we can go step by step and proceed with this project. In the area of right outside of North Mankato, the first phase going west towards New Ulm, we already have about $650,000 of federal funds that are waiting, that are sitting there that can be started to purchase right away. The city of North Mankato has $1.5 million available to start working on the interchange that's designed there. Nicola County has approximately $100,000 that's available. We just received another $500,000 from the Area Transportation Partnership for 2013 to complete part of that project. Unfortunately, we can't get started because EIS is over 3 years old and has to be reviewed again. We just met with the Department of Transportation, and I don't want to make this sound like they're not trying. But part of their problem has always been that they don't push the EISs until the projects are scheduled and the funding is there. Well, today, there's stimulus money that's been out there, but we can't go after it because we don't have the first step of the project done, and we aren't able to acquire the property until that's finished. So what we're here today is say, we want these EISs completed so that we as a city, we as a county, all along Highway 14, that we can work in partnership with MnDOT to try and raise the money to complete this project. This is very important for, you know, stepping away as the president of Highway 14, it's very important for the city of North Mankato. We currently are waiting on this interchange to be built. We have property purchased right up to the interchange. The last piece was just purchased last week. People are waiting to build there. The city of North Mankato is buying the property, the right-of-way, to reserve it for MnDOT until the land could be purchased, and the EIS will allow us to purchase it as part of the acquisition. This is all new development that is going in. These are all projects that are scheduled to be built within this coming summer. We just had another group that have come to us and want to purchase the property on the other side of where the interchange is going to be. This is all growth that we want to continue to see develop in North Mankato. Again, we're waiting to be stifled. And the last thing I know, we've been up here for years talking about Highway 14, but this is a section of highway that in the last 3 years has killed four people. And about a month ago, Department of Transportation was in Mankato to release their new 20-year projection, which this section isn't on that schedule. The morning of that meeting in Mankato, there was another head-on collision. Two people seriously injured in the hospital. Fortunately, no one died. But that was how the meeting kicked off, is news of another accident on this stretch of highway. So what we're here to do today is ask your support and the support to the MnDOT so if they can get these EISs completed for Mankato to New Ulm and from Owatonna to Dodge Center. We will work in partnership with MnDOT and the state to help raise funds to get these projects completed, but we need that first step so we can go after federal dollars, after stimulus dollars, and after whatever money is out there, because we're willing to push to get this thing done. So, thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. Representative Davis?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and maybe just a couple comments more than even questions, but is this the new way we're doing this? Is this the new way we're building highways? Because I've got Highway 52, 63, 44, 61, where I could bring businesses in and have them testify to the same things we just heard here. They've all had major deaths on those roads. There's some very unsafe spots. I have businesses waiting to build. If this is the way we're doing it, I'm all for it. I think this is great. I'll have a whole bunch of bills in tomorrow. Where's Mr. Chairman, is the DOT going to testify on this?
Thank you very much, Representative Davis. It's my intention that the DOT should weigh in on this. Maybe this would be a good opportunity to call them.
Mr. Chair, I just didn't know if anyone had questions for you to testify before.
Why don't we do that? Are there any questions from members of the committee for the panel for Mankato, either Mr. Zelmer or Mr. Milstead?
Okay, hearing none, then I do believe, Representative Davis, it would be appropriate to have MnDOT's perspective on this. Welcome back.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Frank Papel. I'm Director of MnDOT's Office of Environmental Services and Chief Environmental Officer, which means it's my signature on the EIS when that is done. MnDOT opposes this bill. This bill is directing us as concerned with two EISs which are currently underway. The first EIS is the four-lane expansion from Owatonna and Dodge Center, and as was reported earlier to you, an EIS had been done earlier and completed, and the project waited funding to go ahead. During that time, besides, as they say, the EIS getting stimulus, and you need to reevaluate, doesn't need, and on a 3-year interval, you would need to reevaluate. does not necessarily mean you have to do it over, but that the consensus of the community and MnDOT was that the alternative selected in the 90s was the wrong alternative. So a new EIS was completed, that is, was undertaken, a draft EIS was completed. We have a consultant on board. We have consensus on the final alternative, and that EIS is working towards completion, at least within the time frame as specified in this. If it would not be completed by the end of this year, we anticipate completion of the EIS project early in 2010. The four-lane project that we are currently looking at between North Mankato and New Ulm is more problematic. That process has a draft EIS completed. Our intent is to do the final EIS with our in-house District 7 resources rather than going to a consultant. And we are currently working on trying to get a consensus alternative so we can write a final EIS. That there is no logical alternative. Solving one person's problem causes something else. We have issues with farmland. We have issues with the Lutheran High School. We have issues with the quarry. We have issues with other businesses. We have issues with wetlands, floodplain, and cultural resources. The process to develop consensus on a selected alternative can be very time-consuming, and that is the process we are working through now. And we cannot guarantee that a process that is accelerated to be done by the end of this year will reach a decision that is approvable by all of the permitting agencies. And on that basis, we would stand in opposition to the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Pascoe. Representative Davis, did you have a follow-up?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe the first question to Mr. Burris, with what we're trying to do here and all the problems it causes for a minute, can we even do this? Can we just say you will have this EIS done by this date? Can we do that?
Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair, Representative Davids, there are some challenges to setting a date when an EIS has to be done because of the EIS process. Mr. Pascoe could speak to that. As to legislative authority, the legislature could direct the commissioner to take certain steps in highway projects if it so chose to.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Burris, if we just say do it by this date and physically it can't be done by that date, then what do you do? I mean, I realize with the legislature we can do whatever we want. I understand that. But what if through timelines and negotiation, what if they just can't do it?
Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair, Representative Davids, well, that would be a issue. If the agency was fully unable to comply with requirements of law, there would be some potential for lawsuit potentially, and that would be one possibility. And another is the agency would try its best and would try to expedite to the extent of that it could.
Well, Mr. Chairman, to the gentleman from MnDOT testifying, do you believe in this case that you could get these done by December 31st? I know you said it'd be early into next year, but if this law passed, could you do it?
Representative, in the case of the Dodge Center, Tulatana, the answer is if we accelerated that process, in effect, gave more money to our consultant to get it done by that time, we in all likely could. I'm not going to guarantee it, but that to me is within the time frame of doable. The issue, however, in the New Ulm to Mankato is we could, being unable to do it on that time frame with our internal resources, we could hire a consultant, add money to get an EIS done on time. That means to meet this bill, we would have to have a document that I could sign and that could be forwarded to the Federal Highway Administration. That does not mean the EIS process is complete. There are many steps that follow that. The problem that I see in that is in trying to accelerate this process, there is no guarantee we can come to a decision for which all of the agencies which have to permit this project in order to construct are going to agree with our decision. That consensus building process is more of a problem than is the actual writing of the document.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative,
to the gentleman from MnDOT, what's your last name again?
Haskell.
To the gentleman from MnDOT, if we put this into law and we sped it up, and this is the law, so you got to do it,
mm-hmm.
who are you going to take the money away from? Which project can be slowed down because of this one?
This depends.
That would not be my decision. That would be a decision initially, I think, for a district engineer in Mankato, Jim Swanson, who would have to manage his project budget, probably take money out of the way the process would work. If we were going to hire a consultant, it would mean several hundred thousand dollars out of the construction budget, because it's not currently budgeted for. I don't know what project that would be taken away from.
Well, Mr. Chairman, from MnDOT, what you're saying then is if we do this, we could be taking it out of my district.
No.
Possible? Is that possible? Or District 6, what are you?
7.
Well, that's okay.
I believe the author wants to comment, Representative Morrow.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Davis, I share much of your concern. I honestly do. I have constituents along this roadway who have heard year after year, oh, it's going to be done. Oh, wait, there's just one more reason it's not done. It's going to be done. Oh, wait, we might want to put it on the south side of the road. Tonight, I heard for the first time, we might have trouble with the Army Corps of Engineers, a new reason I've not heard until right before this hearing. I think if we just got it straight and got some type of approximate timeline that we actually thought was going to be carried through, I think the constituents in my area who go along this heavily trafficked two-lane road that has been very dangerous, I've got businesses lining up waiting for word of what's going to happen, I don't think we'd be here. I agree with you. This is not the way to do planning. But the frustration level in my area when MnDOT year after year has a new reason why it can't move forward has left people wondering, what else do you do but do it statutorily? If MnDOT tonight would tell me, Representative Ma, we think it might be, we could have it done in a year. Okay. But I don't know, I have no idea anymore when it might be done with internal resources. Representative Davis, I agree with you. Everything you said, I agree with you. But until MnDOT is willing to give my community and the thousands of people who drive that road every day some idea when this EIS is going to be completed, I don't know what else to do but to do it statutorily.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Are there any other questions of the committee for Mr. Pasco? Is there anyone in the audience or the public that would like to testify either in support or in opposition to House File 1693? Representative Morrow, do you want to have some final comments?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members, this is being laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, and we'll take it from there.
Thank you, Mr.
Chair. I'll talk with the author about his wishes. And we have one final bill, last but not least, House File 1246, Representative Erdahl. Let me make some introductory comments about this bill, if that's appropriate here as the author is moving up. For the freshman on the committee, this is a bill that, again, it's a, this is my elected Met Council bill, it's a rite of spring every year. This bill is a rite of spring, and I don't know who you've done this amendment, but others have. There's an all-star cast that has done the Dimmer Amendment over the years. Is that correct?
No, that's correct, Mr. Chairman.
And I have been a voice of opposition to this, and I continue to be, but this has received overwhelming support on the House floor on a consistent basis. I've been maybe one of the dozen that has voted against it. So this year I wanted to do something a little differently, which is to actually give this bill a hearing so we don't go through this whole process on the House floor, which we still may. I don't know where this bill is headed ultimately. So you're going to hear some arguments from Representative Erdahl. You're going to hear some arguments in opposition from MnDOT and others. And at this point, it's my plan to lay this over for possible inclusion. But if anyone on the committee feels the need to have a stronger recommendation of support and vote this bill out, and that's an option, or people feel strongly against it and want the Transportation Committee to take a firm stand against it, that's an option too. But at this point, it's the chair's intention to lay this over for possible inclusion in an omnibus transportation policy bill. But I again, this is controversial, and I am very deferential to the committee's wishes in terms of how they would like to proceed. But at this point, that's the plan, and welcome to the committee, Representative Erdahl.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and
your committee.
I'm sure that by the time I've finished this, you will have switched your position. And I did, my goal was to bring in some testifiers and kind of have the Alumni Hall of Fame here today, but that didn't quite work out. This is a simple bill. It should receive great support and pass on the floor easily, since it did 102-27 last year.
That was okay. I was close.
Yeah, pretty close. Now, let me explain what this bill does and why it should pass. First, I have been in consultation with former Representative Chuck Dimler, former Representative Joel Quinn, who's also a judge after he left this body, and Colonel Roger Letting, formerly of the State Patrol, who all expressed support for this, even though, unfortunately, they all left the state at the same time today. So that's why they are not here.
Not permanently.
No, they're coming back, okay. But they couldn't testify today because they were all meeting, and not together either. I did talk to Representative Heidgerken, who has carried this bill in the past,
right.
And Representative Heidgerken expressed his support tonight, but in his words, you're on your own. And then come back, but he did say also that I should come by Charlie's at Freeport and have a...
That is true. Thank you for that reminder, Representative Riddle. It was Representative Heidgerken, I think, since I was here in 2002
yes.
That carried this.
Now, getting into the meat of the matter here, currently, because of the Dimler Amendment, if a speed limit is posted at 55 miles an hour, a driver may drive up to 65 without having the violation recorded on their record in St. Paul. Now, of course, they have broken a speeding law. They may still be fined. They are still breaking the law. This bill would do the same on highways posted at 60. You would get the Dimler Amendment up to 70 miles an hour. Now, you likely hear that this bill will cause more speed and more accidents. Well, contraire. Studies indicate that this is not true. The U.S. Department of Transportation Federal Highway Administration has issued the following results of this study. Raising speed limits, and that is not really what this does, but if you raise the speed limits by 5, 10, or 15 miles an hour, there's a minor effect on vehicle speeds. An increase in the posted speed limit did not create a corresponding increase in vehicle speeds. The report further stated that raising the posted speed limits did not increase speeds in accidents. Speeds are set at the 85th percentile of the speed drivers drive act dependent upon the rating of the highway. Drivers generally drive at the speed where they are comfortable. I also like to cite the MnDOT report, the Minnesota Speed Management Program, which says, and I appreciate the support of MnDOT on this, the Minnesota Speed Management Program, a cooperative project within the Minnesota Department of Transportation and the Minnesota Department of Public Safety, was developed within the framework of the Minnesota Comprehensive Highway Safety Plan. The overall goal was to reduce the number of fatal and life-changing crashes on Minnesota highways. The MSMP involved a speed limit adjustment on 850 miles in Minnesota's 55-mile-per-hour highways. The speed limit was increased in those highways to 60 miles an hour. So in these enhanced areas, it would be a 60-mile-an-hour speed limit for this study. It involved increased speed enforcement by the state patrol, county sheriff, and local law enforcement on selected highways. There were four waves of enhanced enforcement, one of 6 weeks, three of 8 weeks, each followed by 4 weeks of regular enforcement. The MSMP involved extensive public education, organized by the Office of Traffic Safety, with approximately 10,000 public service messages presented on the radio. Two evaluation efforts were conducted. The University of Minnesota compared travel speed data and crash data obtained during the MSMP with historical data. Throughout the MSMP, there were decreases in the number of drivers traveling at least 10 miles an hour over the speed limits. Decreases of 28.7% on two-way highways, 28.7% on four-lane divided highways, minus 42.9% on rural freeways, and minus 11.2% miles per hour on urban freeways. The university's evaluation showed that there were reductions in the number of fatal and life-changing crashes during the MSMP. Market line research conducted the second evaluation using telephone surveys and found 9 in 10 drivers support the speed limit increase from 55 to 60 in both metro and greater Minnesota. The MSMP, in concert with other efforts that are part of the Minnesota Comprehensive Highway Safety Plan, resulted in reductions in the number of speeders on Minnesota highways and reductions in the number of fatal and life-changing crashes, making Minnesota roads safer. That from the MnDOT Commission report. The fact is, expanding this amendment to 70 miles an hour on 60 mile an hour highways would not really change much of anything about driving behavior. It would not change speed or accidents. It would change one thing: how speeding is recorded, and thus how much insurance companies charge on their premiums. You might ask, would this cause other premiums to go up? That might be used as an excuse, but here's another fact for you. Only about one-third of payments to insurance companies go to claims, this according to Judge Quinn. And so, basically, I think we have a fairly common sense bill here that has received the overwhelming support of the legislature in the past, at least of the House of Representatives. And I would ask you to pass this on and afford me the opportunity to try to negotiate with Senator Murphy.
Okay, members, thank you very much. It was a very good presentation, and I wanted to see if any members of the committee had any questions of Representative Erdahl. I know there are opponents in the audience, and we'll hear from them.
Just kidding.
Okay, any questions of Ben Houston? To the author?
Well, I'm sorry, I was in another committee.
Sure.
Have you already heard from
no.
Patrol?
No. I could do it again for you. We are going to hear from the State Patrol, and the motion is to lay it over Representative House. We are going to have a small omnibus bill for transportation policy, and that's where the motion is. So let's hear from the State Traffic Engineer, Ms. Groth from MnDOT, and I think we also have the State Patrol as well.
Hi.
How you doing?
Welcome back. We had our second speeding bill of the session, so we always welcome Ms. Groth when that takes place.
Thank you, Chairman Hornstein. My name is Sue Groth, and I am the State Traffic Engineer, and I am here today to testify in opposition to this bill. And I appreciate you reading that, because I can explain a little bit about, in fact, I was going to bring that up, the speed management program that we implemented 3 years ago and the success of that and why it was successful. And it had little to do with raising the speed limit and it being successful. It had much more to do with the enforcement efforts that was out there, that was put out there to educate people that the speed limit is the speed limit. And that was why that particular project worked, and why we are actually considering doing that project again. But if you recall, I'm going to back up a little bit. We came with that project before this committee. I think some of you were part of that committee a few years ago to address the concern that there were some legislators that just wanted to raise all speed limits on 55-mile-per-hour roads to 65-mile-per-hour roads. And we obviously were very opposed to that. Most of our two-lane, two-way roads in the state are designed for a speed, a design speed of about 60 miles per hour. So the 60 going automatically up to 65 carte blanche across the whole state, we just felt was really not appropriate. So our compromise or our idea was, okay, we do agree that some of our 55-mile-per-hour roads could be raised to 60 miles per hour, provided people really followed the 60-mile-per-hour speed limit. And the only way to really do that is to increase the enforcement and education that the speed limit is the speed limit. And obviously, increasing the Dimler Amendment or broadening the Dimler Amendment is exactly contrary to that. It's, again, sending the message, I believe, that it's okay to drive 10 miles over no matter, you know, where you are. And I think that that is contrary to our safety policy and our safety initiatives at MnDOT. We do know that crash severity is a function of speed, and so speed and aggressive driving are critical factors in fatal and life-changing crashes on all of our highways. In fact, as the representative stated, speed cited as a contributing factor in 28% of crashes. 28% of crashes, speed is a factor, and I'm sure Michelle will testify to that. Illegal and unsafe speed is the greatest factor among our younger drivers. So again, what is this message sending to our younger drivers? You do not have to drive the speed limit because you have 10 and you can go over 10. So getting back to the speed management program, if you recall, I handed out this little diagram or little spreadsheet, and I wanted to talk about this, about why on 55-mile-per-hour roads or 65 and 70-mile-per-hour roads, these are the exact roads we do not want to encourage higher speeds. People do feel more comfortable right now driving vehicles because vehicles are actually made to feel more comfortable. And so it kind of encourages people to feel a level of comfort greater than actually that the road would provide, especially on our high-speed freeways. And as they get quieter and quieter, I mean, that just, again, increases the desire for people to drive faster than it's actually really safe for them to drive. So what this is here, going back to 1997, we increased speed limits in 1997, if you recall. And we did a study of a comparison of 5 years before we increased speed limits and 5 years after we increased speed limits to look at what happened on those roadways. So if you look across the bottom, you can see we had 55-mile-per-hour roads that stayed 55-mile-per-hour roads. There were about 8,600 of those on our trunk highways. And then we had a few that went from 55 to 60 miles per hour. I believe that was within the ring and on 371 in Brainerd. Then we had 815 miles that went from 55 to 60 miles per hour. And we had a few that stayed 65, and then we had over 700 that went from 65 to 70. We looked at the fatal and A-injury crashes for 5 years before and 5 years after. And we also looked at the vehicle miles traveled, and that's shown in blue. So if you look in the center of the chart there, these rural expressways right now experienced at that time 93% more crashes, or fatal crashes, fatalities I should say, on the roads after the speed limits were raised. And if you look at the 65, those would be 5 years before, so that's in 92 to 90, whatever, 6, and then 98 to 2002. And that was the time the study was done 3 years ago. I didn't have time to redo it, the data for the committee today. But this was our justification or our reasoning why we increased the enforcement in that speed management program, not only on the 60-mile-per-hour roads that we were increasing speed limits, but also on these roads that were raised in 1997 from 55 to 65 and 65 to 70. So anyway, the point of this is, I just want to say, is that these rural expressways and rural interstates are most dangerous highways and to encourage people to be able to drive 10% or 10 miles over the speed limit is just contrary to where we want to go. And MnDOT will not, I mean, I think we were really pleased with the results of our study, and we were considering raising speed limits on some more highways from 55 to 60 based on kind of engineering and going out and deciding which ones can really handle that. But if this, you know, passes and people are going to then be allowed to drive 70 miles per hour on those roads, I don't believe that we're going to move forward with that because it's just the wrong direction from a traffic safety standpoint. So.
Thank you very much, Ms. Grubbs. Are there questions, Representative David?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Ms. Groth. What kind of data do you have for accidents or speeding that for the highways that have gone to 60 miles an hour? Because what you have here is you have 55 to 60, and it's pretty consistent with miles traveled with the accidents and the fatalities. Pretty close. Do you have any data that says what happens if you're on the 60-mile-an-hour roads?
The ones that we raised to 60, the 900, is that what you're talking about, Mr. Chair?
Well, Representative Davis.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Ms. Groth, I guess that would be the second one from the left to the right.
Right. There were this second one, Mr. Chair, the one from the second from the right, the 55 to 60, that was very few miles of road, but you're right, and it wasn't that, you know, the vehicle miles traveled went up 20%, and then the fatalities went up 31. That wasn't, you know, I didn't circle that because it wasn't so unusual. With the project that we did where we raised from 55 to 60 just 2 years ago or 3 years ago, the 900 and some miles, the studies that we did, the accidents, the speeds, we were able to bring the speeds down. I mean, the people that were actually driving 70 miles per hour or higher, we were able to bring them down because we had extra enforcement out there to keep people at the 60 miles per hour. And we saw that crashes and fatalities did not go up. And so we've been able to continue to do some extra speed enforcement over the last 3 years, and we're looking at starting another wave of doing some speed enforcement to try to get the speed limit to be what is posted, the 60 miles per hour.
Thank you. Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Ms. Groth, I'm concerned about something you said. You said something like that if this was passed into law that you wouldn't even look at going from 55 to 60s anymore. What's the difference? We have 55 now. It goes to 65. Why not have 60 go to 70? We're not saying go out and speed because you can still get a ticket. It's just not. It's not going to show up on the insurance.
Mr. Chair, again, I just feel that it's sending the message that it's okay to go 10 miles per hour over, which is not true on a 60-mile-per-hour road that's not designed to be able to handle a crash of somebody going that fast.
But Mr. Chair, and Ms. Groth, if the legislature says we're doing this, I would hope you would not stop your program finding what highway should be at 60 miles an hour.
Mr. Chair.
Sure.
We would have to, you know, in conjunction with the State Patrol and with our office, we would have to, you know, honestly think about whether or not we would want to move forward with raising more of those speed limits if we see that this is going to mean that people could drive 10 miles per hour over. Because then that would be, to me, that would be saying I'm going to be endangering more people because now they're thinking they can go 70 on these 60-mile-per-hour roads when really they should be going 60 miles per hour and absolutely no more than 65, which is what the current dimmer allows, that 5 miles per hour extra on those 60-mile-per-hour roads. So.
Well, Mr. Chair, and Ms. Groth, that's not what the data shows. It shows if you go from 55 to 60, it's pretty consistent. So where's the fear coming from that if we do this, there's going to be all these extra accidents?
Because, Mr. Chair, you're changing the Dimmler Amendment, I feel that the Dimmler Amendment, again, is going to be bumping it up another 5 or 10 on all the roads. And I think that, again, that's just to me, that's going in the wrong direction.
But, Mr. Chair, and Ms. Groth, what does it matter what you think? If the legislature says do this, you're going to hold back and not do what you're supposed to be doing? Is that what you're saying?
No.
And then we'll move on to Representative Welty.
If this legislation passes, I believe that we are going to have to go back and kind of look at our intention, which was to go out and look at raising more speed limits to 60 miles per hour.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Welty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Gross, I'm looking at the fiscal note that was prepared for this bill, and I'm surprised after hearing your comments that the fiscal note came back and it said that there's a zero fiscal impact to this state, when you were stating that it, when you did increase your speed limits from 55 to 60, that you put out additional enforcement in order to try to control those speeds. So can you, did you have a chance to weigh in on the fiscal note?
Mr. Chair, no, I didn't, and I do not believe that MnDOT, with this bill, would have, I do not believe there's any fiscal impact to MnDOT on this particular bill.
Right.
Because it's not dealing with changing speed limit signs or anything like that again.
Right.
Oh. Well, thank you. Representative Morrow?
Go ahead.
President Wells, yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Gross. I'm just following up on what you said, and I can see how if this legislation is adopted, that people will kind of feel that they can drive higher speeds, and if your goal is to try to keep people driving within reason of the speed limit, that if you're putting more resources, whether it's from the state patrol or the county or the city, into campaigns to keep speed limits down, I really believe that that should be factored into this. And I know you're saying that there's a slight difference, but in reality, if we're going to adopt this and you know it's going to lead to people driving at higher speed limits, and that's going to cause more fatalities, and you're going to be putting additional resources out there to try to reduce or keep people at the speed, I think it should be reflected in this.
I guess I would leave that to the State Patrol to weigh in on what it would impact their resources.
That's a good transition, perhaps, to bring in the State Patrol. But quickly, about all Representative Erdahl.
Well, yes, I'd like to respond before I get the opportunity to respond to the patrol.
Sure.
Keep them separate here. Just a few comments. First of all, I have not run across any data in my research that shows that speeds increased when you went from 55 to 65 with the Daimler, that people were already basically driving those speeds. The point I want to make is that people don't speed up. Right now, people generally, in that 60-mile-an-hour speed limit, some are driving 8, 9, 10 miles over. They're not going to suddenly go more than that because this is passed. Also, there's the assumption that the speed is what causes all of these problems. According to Judge Quinn, other data that I've looked across, and the figures here, I believe 28% cited speed as a main factor. Well, that's in one poll. I've also seen a survey where in Florida, 2% of the accidents were cited involving speed. Judge Quinn and others cite the fact that distraction and drinking are the main factors in accidents. And in fact, she mentioned, Ms. Gross did, the 5 years before, 5 years after, 1998 to 2002 was one series. Keep in mind that a lot more cell phones, a lot more texting, and those types of things have gone on in the more recent surveys. It's distraction, it's drinking that causes serious accidents, much more so than speeding. And once again, as Representative Davids mentioned, we're not changing the speed law. We're just saying that basically people can keep on doing what they're doing without getting this on their record and having to pay higher insurance premiums. And that's really what it's all about. If you recall the passing debate with Representative Riccovina of a week or so ago, we're running into the same types of things here. So, by the way, on that fiscal note, if they do one, it should come out a plus to the state of Minnesota. That should be making more money because there will be less cases contested. So thanks for the fiscal note idea. I'd forgotten that one.
Representative Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really don't want to get into this, but I'm just kind of curious always.
You know, the interstate highways were built in the 60s, and a lot of these roads, whenever they were built, they established a speed limit, and the idea is to take it 85% percentile. None of these have been adjusted to the new percentile of speed limit, I presume. They've not been reevaluated. I presume that the 85 percentile on some of the interstates is not 70. There were no adjustments ever made in 20 or 30 years for that.
Mr. Chairman, the speed limits set on the interstate are set in statute. They are statutory speed limits, so we have not raised them, and we would be opposed to raising them because, again, our design features for these roads, even though people feel comfortable driving at a faster speed, they are not designed for people to be able to recover going at a faster speed. So 70 miles per hour on our rural interstates, I believe, is high. I just drove from here to Florida and back last week, and I would say the majority of states have their rural interstates set at 65 miles per hour, not 70. So I was surprised. That surprised me. So we were high on the high side.
Representative Leader, and then Representative Wells.
No, I don't argue on that point at all, but it appears to me that basically, we've seen a lot of change in technology, the cars and everything else we have, and there have been no adjustment in speed limits at all based on 20, 30 years ago. And as we progress every year, and I'm not saying it should be, but I guess I don't think we should raise the speed limit in that sense either, but certainly the cars and everything can go are more safe, and you don't have it. And I kind of agree that a lot of the accidents aren't basically... The severity of the accident is due to speed, but most of the accidents probably are some other reason. And I'm a little concerned. I frankly don't like this idea that I should be paying more on my insurance just because somebody else is maybe, it's on their record. And I can agree with you. I'm concerned about the increase in speed, but I think we're really sticking the public with the insurance companies allowing them to raise the premiums.
Okay, Representative Welty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Erdahl, I'm just wondering, how are we going to get this message across to our motorists when, as I'm reading this, and please clarify if I'm incorrect, but let's say you're going 30 miles per hour, you get pulled over going 40, the Dimmler Amendment does not apply, correct?
Representative Erdahl.
What is the question?
Well, essentially, I'll break it down. And the question essentially is, is it your intent that this bill only covers the 55 and 60 mile per hour speed limit? Because that's what I'm interpreting it as right now.
Right. Right now, the Dimmler is, the Department of Public Safety maintains the record. Speeding violations are not placed on the driving record if the driver was traveling no more than 10 miles an hour above the speed in the 55 zone or no more than 5 miles an hour above the speed limit in the 60 mile per hour zone. We're just talking about another 5 miles an hour. And the Dimmler never recognized the 30-mile-an-hour speed limit.
Representative Welty.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a follow-up to maybe the State Patrol when they want to weigh in. What I'm trying to figure out right now is this. Is if we're going to end up creating an issue where people are going to come into their insurance companies and say, why did it apply to me at, you know, at 55 and 60, but not at 30 or not at 45 or not at some other speed limit? So that's my question to you. Does it only apply to this certain speed limit, or is it going to apply to everyone? So no matter if you're driving 30 or you're driving 70, you go 10 miles per hour, the Dimmler Amendment applies to you.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Welty, it says I read it. It's the only change is for those 5 miles an hour. Now, if people are going to question the 30, the 40, or whatever, I mean, they've had, 20 years to do that. The Dimmler Amendment has been in effect a long time. Those questions would have been asked and answered, I would hope, long ago. Uh-oh.
I'm worried now. Morrow's got a law book out. But this is talking about another 5 miles an hour. And I don't anticipate a rush into insurance businesses asking about that.
Members, let's hear from the State Patrol. Thank you, Representative Rowe. They have been waiting patiently, and I think have a lot to say on this matter. So welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, Michelle Puckner, State Patrol. Do I have a lot to say? Not anymore. I think Ms. Groth has covered statistically everything that one could possibly argue, and I won't beat the dead horse on those numbers. People believe what they want to believe. I've been a trooper for 27 years, spent the first 18 years on the road, spent 6 of those years doing accident reconstruction. And I realize that you can get data and statistics and studies to say whatever you want them to say. We can all tweak the numbers, we can all look at statistics and get them to say, if it's about anything. I can just tell you from my personal experience what I've experienced on the road. I was on the road when they implemented Boomer. I can tell you the speeds went up. I can tell you that did occur. Did it cause more crashes? I can't be certain of that. Do I think the crashes that did occur were more serious? Yes, I do. Do I think speed is a major factor in crashes? Yes. For my accident reconstructions that I've done, definitely. Do I think inattentive driving is the number one cause? Absolutely. But I think anything that sends a message to people that we should be driving faster, or that it's okay to drive faster, we're kind of saying that. We're saying, if you're only 10 or over, that's not so bad. We're not going to put that on the record. I think the two things that deter people from driving faster are they don't want a ticket to go on the record, and they don't want to lose their driver's license. And I must confirm right now that a young adult putting out there driving, that's one of the audiences that we're trying to target, kind of drive down those crashes. They're highly represented in crash facts right now, and anything that might allow them to maybe increase their speed a bit, especially with their inexperienced driving, and be involved in more crashes, I think is a travesty, so I would hate to see that occur. I think the statistics have been going over and over. I won't weigh in on that. That's my concern.
Thank you. Are there any other questions from committee members? Representative David.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To Representative Erdahl, has the insurance industry weighed in on this at all? Have they taken a position, yay or nay, on your bill?
Mr. Chairman, Representative David, fortunately, no.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Representative Morrow, I believe, is the last question here.
Well, thank you. And this is just showing how little I know about this. Representative Erdahl, how many other states do this? Just generally have this. Do you know?
I don't know. I don't think any. But
great. Thank you.
Hey, members, are there any additional questions? We're going to do the...
Oh, is there anyone who wishes to testify either for or against House File 1246? They did have a Susan Palmer on the list.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Susie Palmer. I'm with the Office of Traffic Safety in the Department of Public Safety. And I also would like to testify against this bill. I think we hear a lot about how this affects insurance rates of individuals. I think, for especially our younger drivers, what really concerns them is having their license, not their insurance rate. And the number of speeding tickets on your license is one of the things that Driving Vehicle Services looks at when they're deciding, is this a person who really should be driving, or is this a person who needs a little corrective action at this point? In Minnesota, actually, a lot of our crashes, each and every year, do involve speed. Every accident report that is written, an officer has a choice of two different contributing factors, and one of those is illegal or unsafe speed. And year after year in Minnesota, one out of every four fatal crashes involved an illegal or unsafe speed. One in four is higher than for anything else. It's higher for than distraction. It's higher than impaired driving. One out of four is the highest as any of those contributing factors go. About 12% of all crashes in Minnesota in 2007 involved illegal or unsafe speeds. The more severe crashes, of course, that number goes up. You can't really argue the laws of physics. If you're moving faster, you have less time to react to that dog crossing the road. You have less time to react to a sudden stop in front of you. So the faster you're going, the less time you have to stop quickly. Your distances are just increased, and there's no getting around that. That's just the way it is. Higher speeds mean a greater potential for loss of vehicle control. They increase the injury severity. Speeding affects both the probability of a crash and the severity of injuries produced by a crash. Without the certainty of a ticket being on a driver's license record, I think we lose one of our biggest incentives for especially getting the young drivers to pay attention to their speed. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Ms. Palmer. Are there any other any questions of Ms. Palmer? Okay. Is there anyone else in the audience or the public that wishes to testify in favor or in opposition to House File 1246? Okay, members, is there discussion? Okay, well, we'll get another crack at this potentially when we do our markup, but Representative Riddell, I'm going to lay this over.
Final word.
Final word, okay. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, basically, with actual empirical data, the case is not against this has not been proved. The fact is that we're talking, again, 5 miles an hour. Right now, I mean, we're not talking about increasing the Daimler 10 miles an hour. We're talking about increasing it 5. You can already go 65. So it's that other 5 miles an hour that we're talking about. And past studies have indicated that there is not a great increase in the number of speeders or of accidents in those in the increase. It didn't happen under Daimler. At least that's what the studies have shown from the National Department of Transportation and others. Now, certainly, I would not and am not advocating an increase in the speed limit. I don't advocate, if I felt it were a dangerous thing, that it would lead to these, I would not support this. But I don't. And so basically, my final word is that this really isn't going to change anything, at least not significantly. And the only thing that it will change is that there won't be the reporting to the state, and that insurance companies will not up the rates on all these people.
Thank you. And members, you know, I don't actually recall this bill getting a formal hearing, so it's very helpful. I think it was especially helpful to hear from both the author and the concerns that were raised by our public entities here.
And they did a fine job. I want to thank them, too.
Yeah, and so, you know, it's good to get these issues out, and I learned a lot, and, you know, we'll potentially wrestle with this again later in the week, but at this point we'll lay it over. And with that, our formal agenda for bills is completed, but I would like to see if Representative Welty would be willing to move the minutes of our previous meeting. This would be the minutes from March 18th.
Mr. Chair, I reviewed the minutes from March 18th, and I move their adoption.
Okay. Representative Welty moves the minutes from March 18th. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. Two announcements, members. So tomorrow we'll be in this room at 4:30. We have 11 or 12 bills.
Oh, God.
So hopefully we can get through those relatively quickly, but obviously leaving enough time for for good debate and discussion. On Wednesday, we'll be in room 5, our usual room, and that's scheduled for 1 to 2:30, and that'll also be a bit of a crunch because we have 5, maybe 6 bills that day. And then we'll be in the basement hearing room on Friday at 10:30, and that has been set aside to look over if there's any other bills that are referred to this committee from other committees. We just don't know kind of what's percolating through the system now, but I know of a couple of bills potentially that will be referred to this committee from other committees. We'll do those on Friday so they make deadline, and then we will also take a look again at a small omnibus policy bill to match up with what's going on in the Senate. So that's our schedule for the week. I think once we get through tomorrow night, it'll be a little like going home. But plan on a relatively lengthy hearing beginning at 4:30 in room 10 tomorrow.
And then you don't plan on like a 2 a.m. ending or anything, do you?
That's up to the committee, but I do believe we have rules about that for committee.
So we went to Mountain Time last week.
I would not anticipate us going that late or even much past 10 o'clock, but just plan on a little longer day tomorrow. And then for DFL members, just so we can have a very quick meeting to go over some of these bills and some other housekeeping items upstairs per the memo that you received in 400. We'll have that quick meeting now and with 400 North. Okay, 400 North very quickly. And with that, if there's no other announcements or agenda items, this meeting is adjourned.